This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Kusu Chuang and Wang Xiaoning. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Friday the 17th of January. And what are we thinking of doing this weekend?
Eating.
are you like Xiaoning Chuang, eat, sleep, run, repeat?
No lah, I don't. I eat, sleep, but I don't run. Just, there's one more thing which you can't repeat on there. And it's not what you think.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'll be cooking too, though, because it's like the last weekend before Chinese New Year.
Yes. What time should we come over?
You guys, you, Kosu Chuang, are an opportunist at heart, okay?
A capitalist first, opportunist second.
Okay.
It's either when can we come over or what are we going to be having on Monday?
I'll think of something. I'm
sure
I'll
bring... Oh, we're going to your place for Chinese New Year, are we?
Yes, you are.
We are invited.
So you will be fed at some point,
nice,
Chuang.
Nice.
Of course. I love to feed you all. Actually, it's quite a joy to watch you all eat because you all are like locusts.
I guess it's really fun. What's fun about these festive seasons is that you do have really great gatherings of friends. You know, you get together outside of the ordinary, and even it's different from when you just decide to grab dinner as a group. When you meet at someone's house for Chinese New Year, Hari Raya, Deepavali, Christmas, there is a certain festive air to it, and everyone's spirits are all ramped up as a result. So it's really quite fun. I do enjoy this festive season for that.
Yes,
reason.
Well, thank you, Wang Xiaoning. Without you, we would be nothing.
Oh my gosh! What do you want? What do you want? Obviously, which I'm already giving.
now it's time to say, bao yu, all the fancy things.
I don't expect bao yu. Think along
What is bao yu?
Abalone.
Ah, so, okay.
No, I think more along the lines of KFC, guys.
KFC is good.
I mean, that works too. So this morning, though, we do have lots of things lined up that are going to be very interesting to be discussing. What do we have on our agenda?
Well, I'll be telling people that we're going to be following, someone is going to be following Jacinda Ardern's footsteps in Malaysia, and good for her.
Oh, very mysterious. Mm. I will be discussing something that the Sex Pistols sang about in the 70s.
Maybe only some of us may relate to that.
Well, if you want to weigh in on those conversations, remember you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. First up, though, we're going to be discussing the rise of Japan's super solo culture. So if you want to listen to that, be sure to stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was September by Earth, Wind & Fire, and earlier Let's Dance by The Ramones. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin, Chuang and Xiaoning. So it appears that being alone may be becoming more trendy in Japan. And this is something that obviously over in the Western world, people are rather more familiar with. You know, I think actress Emma Watson described the single life as being self-partnered. And there is this... kind of embracing of the idea that you being alone can be equally as fulfilling, whether it's in relationships or whether it's just doing things by yourself. And this is something that is starting to catch on in Japan, where being alone was considered much more of a big deal because Japan tends to be rather a more conformist society, and to be seen eating alone, for example, would have been extremely... I think the association with eating alone, rather than be seen eating alone, some people would actually take their food into a bathroom stall and eat it there. That's how extreme...
Thank God, Xiaoning's attention.
The peer pressure is there.
Yeah, it was a big social taboo, right?
Mm-hmm, it's a huge social taboo.
Yeah, the social... Especially for females. Not wanting to be gender specific, but I'm just wondering why this is happening. Is there some kind of...
As in to be alone or okay not to be alone?
No. Why people feel the need to be alone? Because this is not situational, you know. It's happening all over the world. Is there something in terms of the environment or the economy or psychological shift? You know, like how the earth is always changing, right?
I think society
is
changing.
Is it cosmic? Something along those lines?
I'm sure it's something to do with society, more women men and women getting married later in life, maybe finding partners later in life, family units being started later in life. So yeah, you do have people doing more things alone, and there's no stigma attached. Another thing I see more common is people traveling alone.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's right, that's right.
Yes, and solo traveling is very it's more common than it was like 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. And very confident. So maybe it's a self-confidence thing, because last time, 20 years ago, you might be able to do it, but would you be confident enough to do it?
I think it's a self-confidence and definitely an independence thing as well.
Yeah.
Because like you said, Shanning, you know, family units are getting started later. So as a result, both men and women come out into the workforce. They do spend time doing things for themselves rather than getting attached immediately.
Yeah.
And you get used to that kind of freedom. And as a result, you are more willing to do things like, you know, go on a solo shopping spree or a solo spa day or a solo movie experience than perhaps people were before this. I don't think necessarily that this is something new. I just think that maybe the social taboo around doing things alone has eroded or has started
eroding. That's a good point. Yeah.
Because before, I do still know people who 5, 10 years ago were very anxious at the idea of sitting and eating alone.
Yeah.
Like they wouldn't do it.
I love it though. I love to eat alone because there's no one to disturb. You know what I mean? You can just eat as much as you
want. Well, we do know you love your food, so you want the 110% concentration on that whatever dish,
yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah. Don't have to go and make conversation people you don't know.
But the reason why these people found it stressful was because they didn't want to be seen alone.
Okay, so, they didn't want the connotations attached.
Yeah, the connotations attached.
So, but now, you know, you kind of, especially once you move into the working world, you kind of, you're busy, you're distracted, people care less, I think.
Yeah, I don't give any much thought to people eating alone. Do you, Kosi?
No,
I'm
really.
Like, everyone's just going about their business for the day,
but
right?
But it's going to extreme examples. Like on YouTube, there's a lot of content creators who are going around the world doing their own thing and they're doing solo travel. Now, this is Dutch girl. I follow her on YouTube. Her thing is Itchy Boots, right? She's a biker. She's now in South America. She's been doing these trips for the last 3 years, all on her own, solo, self-funded. She worked in oil and gas, and then she made a pile of cash, and then she's just spending her own money. And it's amazing. And she does it all solo, all the filming, all the editing, all by herself. It's amazing.
So, okay, I mean, flipping this around, what are the kinds of things that, I know we don't bat an eyelash at eating alone, but are there things that you would hesitate over doing alone?
Well, there's obviously a few things where you need another person, clearly. Conversation is one.
Yes. Yeah, otherwise it becomes a monologue,
There's an inflection point at which it becomes untenable. For example, you don't necessarily want to get old and ill by yourself because it's dangerous.
Yeah.
If you fall over, who's going to look after you? Who's going to call the ambulance? You know what I mean?
And exactly this point, because The Guardian has another article and it's about the agony of weekend loneliness.
Yeah.
Right? Where people don't speak to another human being until Monday. So on the flip side, society, you know, it's good. Go out, do your own thing. You don't need someone to be there for you when you travel, when you want to watch a movie, when you want to eat. But it cannot be to the point where you have no social circle either. You have no friends.
Yeah, because humans are social creatures. Yeah. You need them. You need each other to survive.
Exactly. And you don't talk to anybody throughout the whole weekend. That's kind of scary also, right?
I think it depends on the person as well, because I have definitely gone through whole weekends where I've barely spoken to another person. And I didn't
including
mind.
Social media?
Including social media. I'm very rarely on social media. Being alone was not something that was ever really very frightening. I very rarely felt alone, perhaps because I read and then I watched. I was always engaged. Or I went out and put myself in a social situation. Say I was in a crowded shopping mall. But so where you don't have to feel like, where you don't talk to anyone, but you feel like you are still part of some collective whole.
Yeah, but you need it to survive. I mean, literally, you do need it to survive. I think studies by MIT Sloan or one of those Ivy League universities, they discovered that literally the secret to longevity is
good, valuable
relationships, whether it's your friends, or your classmates or your loved ones. And that's the one thing that gets you into your 80s and 90s.
Yeah, so, you know, sometimes you want to be alone, but you should always kind of venture out a little bit and spend some time with friends and family.
Yeah. Did you guys watch that movie with Tom Hanks like years ago, Castaway? Like
yes,
you talk to Wilson,
We don't want to get there yet, right?
No, you don't.
Well, do let us know what you think. Are there things you would hesitate to do alone? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a few messages coming up for you and then we'll be taking a look at patterns of civil unrest around the world. So be sure to stay tuned to BFM 89.9. So there's a study put out by a consultancy in the political analysis firm Verus Maplecroft over in the UK predicts that as many as 40% of the countries in the world will experience some form of civil unrest going into 2020. And two countries have been identified as flashpoints, Chile and Hong Kong.
Yeah, and therefore going from 1 to 4 to nearly 1 in 2 is quite disturbing. Mm-hmm. And hence the song from the 70s by the Sex Pistols, Anarchy in the UK. That's quite a simplistic generalization, but you would think that they were basically war-torn countries or poverty-stricken countries like Nigeria or Ethiopia or even India to some extent. But when you mentioned Thailand, so even Thailand is in the list, yeah?
When you mentioned
Hong Kong and specifically Chile, Hong Kong is one of the richest regions in the world. So why are they experiencing these flashpoints? There's a whole bunch of things, right? Economic haves and have-nots, oppressive dictatorial regimes from above, anti-civil liberty maneuvers by the government, whole plethora of reasons why people would be unhappy. And you can see even pockets of unrest in Malaysia. Obviously, not to the point where we're going to be included in the list, but you can see why.
Well, we had our protests, right? I mean, they were...
But
it's not really, like, I would deem it. Yeah. It was very peaceful and...
Yeah.
Except for maybe the first and second one.
But don't you think this is weird? Because at no other point in time in the world's history or humankind has the world been richer, healthier, enjoying more longevity.
But the richer, you see, that's the point of contention. Right? Because if you look at absolute numbers, then yes, maybe the world is richer. But the disparity between the have and the have-nots have widened increasingly so in the last 10 years, actually. So this whole global shift, or let's say global growth, driven by the ultra-low rates, have actually really benefited the already rich to be even richer. And we see that because the Gini coefficients of countries have not narrowed, but actually widened. And Gini coefficients is the differential between the top 10% versus the low 10%.
Yeah.
So in some countries, you'll be surprised, like Singapore and Hong Kong, the Gini coefficient can be very high, even though the average GDP per capita is also high.
Yeah, I think Malaysia's reading is pretty high as well. Obviously, on par with Hong Kong and Singapore, but might say that Malaysia does not experience these flashpoints because people are still by and large employed and still by and large well-fed.
Yeah, but there are striking similarities between some of the protests that we've seen over this past year, right? And even just these two flashpoints that Verus Maplecroft have identified, Hong Kong and Chile. I said Hong Kong was a country earlier. It's not. It's a territory. They both started with something totally unrelated to the current protest, right? So Hong Kong, it was the extradition bill. Chile was a hike in metro fares. But both of these things tapped into a deeper vein of dissatisfaction with the current economic situation in those two areas. And that is what has given the protests their longevity. Because people have been unhappy. There have been, I suppose, unhappy for a long time. And now that there is an outlet and that people are actually coming out to say, hey, you know, this needs to change, there is a strong current of support for the protests in these two countries, in these two places.
And hence the direct link between this survey and the rise of populism politics in the last 10 years. Very similar, by the way, to the early 1930s when Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, Mussolini, even to some extent,
which then
spawned the Second World War. Because a lot of people were poor, hungry, and disenfranchised, and then they just found hope in certain ways with these people. It's very different. It's very similar today with Duterte from the Philippines, Donald Trump from the US,
Erdogan in Turkey.
That's right.
Because
even Boris Johnson in the UK, they mention a certain narrative which strikes a chord with these poor people. Not that they believe it necessarily, these politicians, but they do it to gain and curry favor and votes.
Yeah, and the messaging is like very simplistic, you know. You vote me in and I will kind of solve all your problems easily. We will kind of bring the country back to glory. Everyone will get their jobs back.
I will make America great again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They ride in on the kind of mistrust of the existing political structures in their countries to say that I'm different, I'm not part of the swamp, I'm going to make your life better. But there has been research to show that when a country votes in a populist leader, over time, their rates of democracy actually fall because populist leaders are much more likely to do things like change constitutions in order to support their staying in power
for
longer.
Which, incidentally, Vladimir Putin is doing in Russia. Just saying.
Just saying.
Just saying.
Yeah, so this is something that is going to be very closely watched as we head into 2020. The consultancy itself expects that Hong Kong and Chile may not actually see peace for another 2 years.
You know what is linked to this as well?
Mm.
Young people and FOMO. Young people and the way they approach life today, which is very here and now, and I'm going to do it today before... You know, the world is rent asunder by the nonsense.
I mean, I would argue that young people everywhere in every time period have this kind of attitude. But
not necessarily, lah. Our generation, where got Shaunin?
No, but most protests are led by students. Honestly, yes. That's quite common. Yeah. So it's the young with their idealism that push the world forward. Sometimes
students have led protests into the 1800s and 1700s. When you look at the student protests in France that happened around the time of the Declaration on the Rights of Man, but this is the problem. The problem, well, now. Now it's become a lot more, I think, widespread and talked about because of the internet and social media, and perhaps more publicised as well. But do let us know what you think about this. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're about to head into the 6:30 news, and here to take you there is Talk About a Revolution by Tracy Chapman, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Viva La Vida by Coldplay, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin-Mark, Kusu Chuang and Wang Shaoning. Now, we have had some momentous news recently. Our MESTECH Minister, so Minister of Energy, Science, Technology, Environment and Climate Change, Yobi Yin, it was announced by the New Straits Times yesterday that she is in her third trimester of pregnancy, and she's expecting a child at the end of March. And this is, I think, one of the first time that we've actually had someone in the cabinet, a member of our government, a minister, actually going to be taking maternity leave while she's on the job.
I'm desperately trying to think of another, and I'm at a blank.
Well, an occurrence like this is as rare as a unicorn sighting, right? I can only think of two: Jacinta Ardern and Benazir Bhutto of Pakistan, right? Jacinta Ardern of New Zealand. The thing is, each act, i.e. being a cabinet minister and our motherhood, in itself is a hugely daunting, difficult, highly demanding task. To do those two simultaneously would require an act of superhuman will and ability. The fact that it's in Malaysia and it's happening right here before our very eyes in full technicolor is interesting.
Yeah, so I think this is going to be a good illustration of some of the maternity kind of practices, like maternity leave that's been instituted for the government sector. You know, we've been talking a lot about, you know, about maternity leave, about paternity leave, and this is going to play out. But I can imagine that she is also going to get some pushback, perhaps, you know, talking about, you know, will she be able to execute her duties while she takes a few months off for maternity leave. But
Assuming she does.
Well, every civil servant is entitled to 90 days of maternity leave, right? And a lot of private sector have also followed suit, like the banks have also allowed it.
Well, in the UK, if you, you know, give birth, you're allowed 8 months paid leave in the UK as a blanket rule of HR.
Well, some countries have a more unusual scheme, mm-hmm. right, where they have joined, what they call it, they don't parental leave. Yeah, they don't define it, whether it's the woman or the man that can take it.
Selang seli lah.
Yeah, it's up to you as a couple to decide.
Mm.
And I think that's a fantastic option. We don't have it here, unfortunately. But at least we have 90 days, because it used to be only 60 days not that long ago.
Yeah, so this is going to be very interesting to watch. And of course, all the best to YB Yobi Yin. And we also actually recently... In international news, there was a similar instance of a Japanese minister declaring that they were going to take leave. But this was notable because this is Japan's environment minister, Shinjiro Koizumi, who's going to be going to be taking paternity leave.
I like the way you say his name as if you know he's your neighbour.
Yeah,
he's
Shinji, you know, he of white flaxen. Is it flaxen? Flaxen head fame? He's got this white hair, Richard Gere thing going on, right, doesn't he? Yeah.
Well, he looks quite young in this picture, but basically he's taking 2 weeks of paternity leave after his first baby is born. I think it's
at the end of the
month. Isn't he a bit advanced to be having a child?
No, this guy looks quite young, Chuang.
Oh, so not the same Koizumi that I know.
He's a relatively young politician, but he is also tipped to be one of the future Japanese leaders, potentially one of the next prime ministers. So this is quite notable because he is very high profile and very popular because of his movie star good looks. He does, I believe, have a brother who is an actor. He is going, it's in Japan, it is very unusual for someone to take paternity leave. Trung, you've completely distracted me now because you've pulled up a picture of Junichiro Koizumi.
Junichiro,
not that one.
The other guy. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. So he's definitely a little bit advanced.
This is Shinjiro, the other one is Junichiro.
This is quite unusual, but I think it's good to be showing that ministers, whether or not they're women or men, can lead the way in taking leave, because this makes it an even playing field, right? If more male ministers took paternity leave to when their children are born, then it would, I think, give them more time to spend with their children, which is a good thing, and B, kind of give less credence to the argument that women are not suited to politics because they have to take time off when they have kids.
Yeah, no question, the landscape is changing, and on the premise that children are our future, you want to give them every fighting chance of doing well in life, and it starts as soon as they are set eyes in this world, right? Whether it's even attention from the parents, both of them, be that as it may.
It's a big thing. What's interesting is that technology also helps, right? Because you can work from home, you can communicate. It's not like you're totally isolated. So I don't see what is the issue if a woman takes 90 days maternity leave. I mean, she should ideally do no work, but if she needs to, that's possible.
Congratulations once again to YB Yobi Yin, who is expecting a bundle of joy at the end of March. Right now, though, we are heading into a few messages, and then we'll be back to take a look at both social media as well as the front pages of the papers. So be sure to stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was God Only Knows by the Beach Boys, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin, Chuang and Shaoning. Thank you very much for your messages this morning. We have had a couple of tweets and WhatsApps. Ramli Sirap has tweeted in to say, in response to our discussion about being alone, and he says, "Alone is a state of mind. I may wake up alone, but suddenly I'm in bed with the morning crew."
You're just too cute, Ro. Honestly.
That's Ramli, yeah.
Ramli. Too cute. Just way too cute.
Well, thank you very much for listening, Ramli, and glad we are able to keep you company in the mornings. Now, we also do have some WhatsApps from, I believe, Ro has WhatsApped in about our discussion on civil unrest.
Yeah, he said Malaysians are too busy shopping and ordering food online to go out on the streets. So cut the Wi-Fi and then, you know, suddenly we'll have a revolution, you know.
I've got something from Mohan. Pushback. Why pushback? Ministers are human too. Deputy is there for that. Well, you're right. Yeah. I also wonder, one of my other questions was, who's the deputy minister for climate change? That person should take over for the duration of the maternity.
So I wish this was a more widespread attitude, to be honest, that you say, oh no, you know, they're human too. They should be able to get leave time. You know, they deserve the right to spend some time with their newborn child. But sadly, this is something that is still, pregnancy discrimination against women is still something that is very prevalent in the Malaysian society. I think about 4 years ago, the WAO did a survey about this and found that 1 in 8 women had fought pregnancy discrimination in the workplace. And it's still not illegal for employers to ask a female candidate, "Are you planning on having kids?" Because when they're interviewing for jobs, because then that employer, you know, calculates, okay, you know, she's planning to have kids, you know, maybe they'll have to foot the bill for maternity leave and all that. So that can be a barrier to entry into the workforce for women.
My girlfriends tell me, never don't bother to go for interviews when you're pregnant.
ever.
Because you will never, get the job. Yeah. That's the perception. And how sad is that? They say, you know, just one look and then they're like, okay lah. You know, you already can tell from their faces they're not interested.
Azhar Nasir says to Kusu Chuang, "Wah, you know what Selang Seli is? I'm amazed."
I know one of the rare phrases, Azhar.
I think because you've had so much success with Selang Seli, Chuang, you should take a look at the Malay papers this morning. We have the Sina Harian and the Metro.
Now
in
you're putting me on the spot. That's why I've got page 10 on the Star newspaper in
already
front of me.
Already prepped. Okay, what does it say?
Well, it's probably the most important news where we are concerned is the Malaysia Media Council. It's getting down to business. There's been 17 industry reps and they've all been named. I mean, some of the names include Rocky, formerly from Malay Mail, Dato' Ahiruddin, actually, to you and me, National Press Club President. Other names in there, Pro Tem Committee Member Dr. Yong Siu Hyung.
There's Jahaba also is in there.
Jahaba is in there.
Of Malaysia Insight.
Special advisor is Dato' Kadir Jazian. He's been appointed the advisor. There's a whole bunch of names. Tan Sri Johan Jaffa is also inside there, I think.
Yes, and we're going to be discussing this later on as well during the after the 7:30 news with Gayathri Venkateswaran of the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. So be sure to stay tuned for that conversation if you are interested in hearing more about the Media Council. I have the New Straits Times in front of me, and their front page is an image of a toll booth, and it says striking a balance. So it's talking about the fact that the cabinet, there have been some reports saying the cabinet plus is not for sale. I nearly said the cabinet's not for sale. Plus is not for sale.
I hope so.
Toll rates are reduced by 18% and no toll increases for 38 years. Now, we're also going to be talking about this later, so be sure to stay tuned.
Well, for the Financial Daily, The Edge, they've got a front page news of 5 years to clear glut of Klang Valley service apartments, Sohos and Sovos. I mean, this is kind of a fact that the property sector is a bit of a doldrum. And we'll also be discussing this on the property show later on at 9:30. And then the Malaysian Reserve also has another headline regarding property, but another angle, which is Prima One to continue giving discounts up to 20%.
What won't be discussed by us later on is page 7 of the Star. It's the full page, full colour, all dancing, all singing ad by Tanaka National, congratulating and thanking the Prime Minister for officiating one of their building openings. And I'm struggling to understand why in this day and age listed companies with shareholder funds from the public are still spending money just to what ostensibly seems to be carrying favour for the politics.
It's not only in the Star, it's also on page 3 of the New Straits Times. Now, that is, though, all of the news that we have for you from the newspapers this morning, because we are about to head into the 7 o'clock news bulletin. But first, here is some music. Overkill by Men at Work, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.